Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Episode 128, this is the American Dream, if you will, Pancakes and Power Slams.
We do that every week. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode 128. We're getting funky like a monkey and living color, if you will. 128 episodes, Pancakes and Power Slams. I am your host, Chris Featherstone. My co-host will be on the air soon. But ladies and gentlemen, like I said before, like I've been touting, like I've been pushing and just talking about throughout the weeks, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very, very special interview tonight. Very excited about this. Just want to thank everyone. Before we go forward, I want to thank everyone for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams. Continue to show your love. Crave Wrestling, follow at Crave Wrestling. Send your emails at cravewrestling@gmail.com. Check me out on wrestling.com, Bleacher Report, What Culture, We Are Wrestling.net. Many, many avenues of where I write and have opportunities to really showcase my thoughts in the pro wrestling world. And we'll get to more of that later. I continue to load up the chat room, and we're going to have some fun tonight on episode 128. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I want to introduce Ring of Honor 2014 Top Prospect winner, Hansen. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm fantastic. Yourself?
I am doing very, very well. First of all, I want to thank you so much for being on episode 128 with us tonight, and I'm very, very excited to know more and let the world know more about who is this Hansen guy that people are buzzing about so much?
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. I'm very gracious to be on.
Awesome. All right, well, without further ado, let's get into knowing more about you. So, Hansen, why did you choose professional wrestling? Did you have any other options, or did you want to become a wrestler as a kid? Was it something that one of your buddies kind of told you about while working out? How did you get your break in professional wrestling?
Yeah, I loved it as a kid. I fell in love with it, and it's all I ever wanted to do. But you said, did I have a choice? I think every person who becomes a professional wrestler has a choice. And usually it's the passion that we have that draws us to it.
Absolutely. So if you weren't a wrestler, Before you was a wrestler, before you wanted to be a wrestler, did you have anything else in mind?
Oh, no. From the moment I saw the 1-2-3 kid beat Razor Ramon, it was, I'm going to be a professional wrestler, and that's it.
Nice. Well, You would not be the underdog in most matches, I'd imagine, but it was definitely one of the biggest underdog moments in professional wrestling history, and I would see why that would be a good inspiration of wanting to be that. I believe that was 1993, wasn't it? Raw 1993?
Yeah, 93 on Raw. As a kid, I was big on the underdogs. I was big 1-2-3 Kid band, Mark Jannetty, and even Aldo Montoya. I was big fans of all the underdogs. So that's what drew me as a child into watching professional wrestling.
Absolutely. So other than 1-2-3 Kid, was there any wrestlers that you remember as a kid that really stood out to you? Who would you call your favorites?
Well, it was all those guys in that era. It was Razor Ramon. It was Shawn Michaels. It was the 1-2-3 Kid. My favorite of all time was Mr. Perfect. And as I fell in love with professional wrestling, because Curt Hennig at that point was kind of fading out of WWE, as I became a bigger fan, I got all the tapes and I watched all the old SummerSlams and all the old WWE stuff, and I completely fell in love with everything Mr. Perfect did. He was my all-time
favorite. That guy was such a consummate professional, and I wish that he would have had a world title run in the WWE. We've talked about Perfect many times on the show as far as just that 93 era was when he had an opportunity to be one of the top baby faces in the WWE, but wasn't booked as such, although he did beat Flair that year as well. But, yeah, I agree. Perfect was definitely one of the best of all time. So I definitely can understand why he was one of the top. Now, I know that you have more of a brawling style, but is there anything that you can see in your wrestling style now that kind of emulates Curt Hennig?
For a long time, a lot of things I did wrestling was related with Curt Hennig, a lot of things he did, a lot of mannerisms and stuff like that. But as I've turned into Hansen, I guess you could say, the war beard, my whole style has changed of how I wrestle in the ring. So there's not much of Mr. Perfect left in me, so to speak. since I've gone through a whole change of my body and my appearance and everything to do with me wrestling, really that's kind of all faded away. I used to try to do a lot of things like the underdogs or the smaller guys, and it never really fit my look or my size for that matter. So over the years, specifically 2 years ago, I've really just completely change everything that I do, and now things seem to be working for me.
Yeah, and I've seen that. I've definitely seen that from your time in the Indies and your opportunity with Ring of Honor, which we'll get to in a minute, and just the complete overhaul of what we know to be Hansen now. So who trained you? You've been – a lot of people don't know that – you know, you've staked your claim, so to speak, in ROH for the past year or two, but a lot of people don't know that you've been wrestling for over a decade now. So let people know about just as far as your indie promotions that you've wrestled with and who trained you to get into wrestling.
I'm based in the Northeast area. I train primarily with Chaotic Wrestling. I work with Chaotic Wrestling up in Massachusetts. When I joined their school, it was Mike Hollow who was the head trainer. Later, the school merged with Killer Kowalski's school. So Mike Hollow and Killer Kowalski are my trainers. I've been wrestling for 12 years now, over 12 years. And I've done a lot of things, never a big blip on anyone's radar, but a lot of WWE extra work, a lot of Ring of Honor dark matches in the mid-2000s. A lot of WWE dark matches in the mid-2000s. A lot of things. It never quite made a big blip on a radar until this year.
So let us know more about your WWE work as far as the dark matches that you did in the mid-2000s.
I did so much extra work. I couldn't count it how many times I've actually been to TV and done extra work. But as far as matches and stuff go, I did a dark match with Brian Black, who later became Palmer Cannon on SmackDown. That was in 2005 at the Fleet Center. I did a Velocity match against Doug Basham later on that year. And I did a match on SmackDown with Sylvester Kirkay maybe a year and a half later.
Man Bear.
Yeah. And he is a big man, because I am a big man. And looking up to him, I was like, wow, he is a big dude.
Yeah. We previously interviewed Elijah Burke, and he definitely explained how big Turkai is, and I can definitely understand why people call him the Man Bear, based on what you and Burke and a lot of other people I've talked to in the wrestling industry have explained about him. And yeah, I can definitely, from the stature, the intimidating stature that you have, you know, looking at someone like Turkai and saying that, I'm sure that's a big thing. So
yeah.
I'd imagine just getting in the ring with him would be just thrilling, you know, to say the least.
Turkai, the funny thing about Turkai on that day, he's the only person I have ever wrestled who has flat out told me to punch them as hard as I could in their face.
Wow.
Yeah. Because he was into the MMA stuff for a while. Mm-hmm. So he would rather get hit in the face as hard as you can, so he knows how to sell it, than, you know, get a wimpy hit that he doesn't quite know how to react to.
Mm-hmm. So what are your biggest takeaways from your WWE experience?
Oh, I learned so much. I don't know what I could pinpoint off the top of my head. There's so much I've done. I also recently did it was a year ago, last week or the week before, that I did a WWE tryout down in Orlando.
Wow.
So all the opportunities I've had with WWE, they've all been just amazing. Amazing opportunities to learn and to grow. I've had so much feedback, working out in the afternoon at TV, from all the agents, from the guys working on the roster. It's always an amazing experience. It can be a little nerve-wracking. Over the years, I was able to become a lot more comfortable, but it can be very nerve-wracking. But it's probably one of the best experiences that any professional wrestler at my level or below me or even above me can get.
Absolutely. So talk about blips and radars. You said that you didn't make many, but you sure as heck did for a promotion called Ring of Honor. I talk about Ring of Honor on my show every week just about, and I always say that I wish that the production was better to really compete with TNA, because I really believe that ROH, and I say this so many times, ROH has the best talent pool in American professional wrestling, period. I will say that, and I will continue to say that, and I will argue with anyone who believes otherwise. I really think that there's such an amazing batch of talent in the ROH family. And we've seen that with Daniel Bryan. We've seen that with CM Punk. We've seen that with Samoa Joe. We've seen that with Nigel McGuinness. We've seen that with AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels. I mean, the list goes on as far as Austin Aries. The list goes on as far as the people who have been really honed their craft in Ring of Honor. And you was in a yearly tournament that Ring of Honor has called the Top Prospect Tournament. And you was making some noise in the very beginning with the agility in your size, and I watched the tournament, and it's so funny. I've been watching wrestling for all of my life, so that's since the early 80s. And so I've seen a trend. When a new guy comes in, the fans usually boo the new guy because they don't know the new guy. They're not really – I mean, the new guy really hasn't proved himself yet to really be over with the fans. I mean, there's been only a few exceptions to that. But for some reason, I noticed that you kind of came in at heelish a little bit and was playing the heel role. But that kind of quickly gravitated to people cheering you because of the agility that you have and your wrestling for the size that you are. And people got behind you very quick, just the spinning heel kick that you do, the cartwheels that you do in the ring. And people got behind you. So, and you end up winning the Top Prospect Tournament against, defeating Raymond Rowe. So let us know your experience in that Top Prospect Tournament and how Ring of Honor has really helped you become one of the biggest buzz wrestlers in wrestling right now.
Well, Ring of Honor is it's the platform that I've always needed. And now with the look that I have, I think that I'm ready to be showcased. And Ring of Honor has given me that opportunity. And, I mean, I'm not looking back. This is my chance to actually shine. It's taken me 12 years to get here, so I want to be able to prove something and show people what I can do. And Ring of Honor has given me that opportunity. And the tournament was just the beginning. And it's been really an amazing ride so far.
How did you get your opportunity to wrestle for ROH?
I did one of the Ring of Honor training camps, or tryout camps, the April before. So that was about a year and a half ago. And after the training or the tryout camp, I was told it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Because they were really impressed with me then. And then I waited and I waited and I waited and I waited. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if they were just blowing smoke or what the deal was. But then I maneuvered my way into that WWE tryout camp about 6 months after that. And as soon as I got word back from WWE that they weren't interested at the present time, Ring of Honor swooped right in and they gave me the opportunity in the Top Prospect Tournament.
That's awesome. So what is your biggest memory in that Top Prospect Tournament that you can recall?
Well, obviously the victory was really, it was something special. But I think... the initial tournament, it was the beginning of the tournament, Cheeseburger and then Everett in the second round. Those were all filmed in Nashville on the same night. And the response from the crowd from my second match against Andrew Everett was ridiculous. And even coming back into the locker room and the reaction from the guys in the back, it really felt like, all right, I got momentum, I can feel it. And I think that was a really special moment for me. That match, the reaction, the crowd reactions, it was just awesome.
That's awesome. Absolutely. So you won the match, you won the tournament, and you had an amazing, very highly respected match against a man called Raymond Rowe, who will also be on the show on October 14th. And because the match went so over, somehow, you guys just gelled together, had a bunch of chemistry, and War Machine was born. Let us know a little bit more about War Machine and how that came together what are your thoughts about that team just formulating and just being one of the hottest tag teams in pro wrestling right now?
Ro and I had never met each other until we wrestled in Pittsburgh for the Top Prospect Tournament for the finals. And, I mean, from the moment we hit each other in the ring and then really bonding afterwards and discovering our stories really aren't all that much different. We've been wrestling just about the same amount of time. We've both had opportunities that just haven't quite manifested in anything spectacular. And now here we are. Again, both of us at points in our career were severely out of weight and we were down and out and didn't know how to get out of gutters, and you know, somehow we found our way, and we ended up in the same place at the same time, and really just fighting for the same thing. We are fighting to become remembered and adored in Ring of Honor, and it's like we're fighting for a common cause. We want a place in professional wrestling history, and Ring of Honor is the place to do it, and the best way for us to do it right now is to become the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions.
I agree. And I'm in total support of War Machine. You guys are actually my favorite tag team in Ring of Honor right now. And you have very War Machine-like music to follow just the characters that you have, just no nonsense, just brutal, intimidating characters. You just recently had a fantastic match against the Briscoes that really led into a Donnybrook, as Jim Ross would say. Let us know a little bit more about just your experience so far as War Machine, and what tag team matches really that you believe really put you on the map.
Well, I think the most recent one with the Briscoes, which ironically is actually our last tag match before Rose injury, but that one, and again the Briscoes match that we had in Cincinnati, both of those were really, really big for us to step toe to toe in the ring, face to face, with really the solid cornerstone of Ring of Honor tag team, really the measuring stick of the tag team division. They've been there since day one. Go toe to toe with them, and both times battle to no contests, we were swinging with the Briscoes and standing our ground and really putting ourselves on the map. So it means something to Ring of Honor if you can kick a Briscoe's ass from corner to corner and still walk out of the building.
So basically, you were talking about a new look. You were talking about just the Hansen that we see now. What's so different about the Hansen that we see now as opposed to the Todd Smith of old?
Well, it was the Handsome Johnny of old. The name and the gimmick that I couldn't shake for the first 10 years of my career. It was the first name that was given to me, and it's what I wrestled as my entire career. So I always the way that we were trained like WWE style, and going to TV as much as I was and having WWE as the main goal, main focus. And that at that time, it was you needed to be 6'2 and 220 with shredded abs, or you're not getting signed. And in that time frame, that was just the way it is. That's what Johnny Ace was looking for, John Laurinaitis. And that's what you needed to do in order to even get looked at or considered at all for a job with the company. So that was my goal, was to be that. And it's just, it wasn't me. So I tried so hard, and every opportunity I was given, it was always just getting better shape. And I literally got to a point where it was like, I can't get in any better shape unless I hop on the gas or take steroids or something like that. And that wasn't something that I'm willing to do. I don't believe in that. So it was really, really frustrating. And then injuries built up. I don't have to really get into details of those, but injuries built up, and then I ended up getting in worse shape. And I was mentally, I was really bitter and upset because I was seeing all these guys. I knew I was better than, but because they had abs, they were getting bigger opportunities than me. So I think I went into like a dark place mentally, and I ended up suffering a really major injury on my shoulder, which took me out for a prolonged period of time. And in that time is when I hit real rock bottom, and I was 330 pounds, and I didn't know if I was ever going to go back to wrestling. And one day I decided that that's it. I'm coming back from this. I'm going to change who I am completely, because I've been given this opportunity to change everything and make everything different in the way that it should be, and make a name for myself. And I was able to pull myself out of the really deep, dark gutter and brush off my ring rust, I ended up shedding at that point in time 95 pounds, all on my road to coming back into the ring. And, I mean, I'm getting a lot of that back now, but it's because I've been lifting weights real heavy. Surgery left me pretty small for a while. But I worked hard. I gave myself the goal. It was either going to be Ring of Honor or WWE, and that's it. I'm not taking no for an answer this time. And I pushed hard, and I changed my look and changed my name, and here I am in Ring of Honor.
That's absolutely amazing. Mad, mad respect to you with that type of determination to pull yourself out of that. I know it's tough, and I deal, I'm a certified life coach, so I deal with many situations like that, and people not understanding and not really seeing any type of alternative but to be where they are now and just to kind of dwell, just to kind of wallow in it. But I definitely give you, you know, extreme respect for seeing a bigger picture and aiming and working hard to get to that bigger picture. And you're right, this is just the beginning for you. I can definitely see, even with the a dozen years of wrestling, you know, it's still it's going to take some time, but at the same time, it's, you know, you're going to persevere through it. I think of the Bret Harts and the Shawn Michaels and, you know, people like them, and taking them, you know, 15 years to be in the business before they get their first world title. So, you know, I definitely can see just the passion that you have, and, you know, people haven't seen the middle. This is the beginning of Hansen, like you said, the Hansen character, and this is the beginning stage. So speaking of the Hansen character, so it's a very interesting character as far as the look is concerned. You really stand out as far as your the attire and the beard. And the look and the music and just a rugged look. So when I first saw you, I was like, man, why isn't this guy a member of the Wyatt family? So just randomly, just for the Pancakes and Power Slams show, if you were to be in a feud with Bray Wyatt, how would you book it?
Oh, geez. I think in the beginning of it would clearly be I'd be one of his followers.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, over a course of a long period of time, tension would build within the faction, come to a boiling point where I would defy the things that he asks, which would, of course, lead to turmoil and matches here and there. I think it would probably start with Bray sending out each member of the Wyatt family for me to have to cut through to get to him. And it would culminate probably in a series of three matches, each one growing in physicality. And I would think the last match would probably end up being some form of cage match or Hell in a Cell with the whole Wyatt family at ringside.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. Seems like, looks like this guy is a booker. a booker by trade. I couldn't have booked it any better than myself. So I'm sure that you're familiar with different areas of wrestling other than Ring of Honor, different promotions and things like that. And that ultimate goal of WrestleMania is usually everyone's dream and what everyone look at. I know that you are very happy with where you are right now, but of course people understand that there's dreams and aspirations that people have. So what is your biggest dream as a professional wrestler right now?
It's a tough question because there's so many dreams, and I mean, right now my biggest dream with where I'm at would be to become a champion, a world champion in Ring of Honor,
mm-hmm.
because of where I'm at. Now, grand scheme of biggest dream that I'd want to accomplish in my wrestling career, in my life right now, would be definitely a match on the biggest stage of them all, WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm. Perfect segue, because my next question to you was, if you were in a match with at WrestleMania 31, just fantasy booking real quick, WrestleMania 31, who would your opponent be and why?
WrestleMania 31? It would be Tommaso Ciampa.
Ooh.
Why Ciampa?
Why Ciampa?
Tommaso started, I helped originally train Tommaso, and me and him have been all over the place together. And it's amazing right now to be in Ring of Honor with him through all the ups and downs that both of us have been through. If you know any history of Tommaso, you know some of the things that I'm talking about that he's gone through and things that I've gone through. And knowing Tommaso as well as I know him and how hard he works and how intense he is about this business and his passions for it, I think the greatest reward that I could think of for everything that the two of us have done would be to wrestle each other at WrestleMania. It was really a dream come true to be able to wrestle him at the anniversary show after I won the Top Prospect Tournament in Ring of Honor. Wrestling for the World Television Championship. That was really a moment for me and him to get that opportunity to hop on a stage and be able to do what we do. But it'd be even more amazing to be able to do it at WrestleMania 31.
That's an excellent choice, the Sicilian Psychopath. He's one of my favorite wrestlers in Ring of Honor. And We have a segment at the end of the show every week called Flavor of the Week, and probably about 2 years ago, probably maybe even more than that, we had a Flavor of the Week episode. What five wrestlers would you bring to the WWE? And Ciampa was one of my choices because I definitely think that he has. Just the zeal. You can just tell the zeal that he has as a professional wrestler, and I think that's an excellent choice. Real quick, we've got I do this with everyone I interview. I'm going to give you a few names and just complete it. Let me know what you think of this person, and we'll start with Christopher Daniels.
I love Christopher Daniels. I didn't really ever have any interactions with him until recently in Ring of Honor since he's come back. But he's been amazing. He's been great to work with, and he gives a lot of great feedback, helping everyone in the company become better at what they do. So I think he's great. And, excellent. God, he can do an amazing moonsault.
BME. The best ever. AJ Styles.
Same with AJ. I've been in locker rooms with him, but never really had any interactions with him until recently in the Ring of Honor. And from Top Prospect Tournament, beginning of the Top Prospect Tournament, that was AJ's return to the company, and it was, I guess, my debut in the tournament. And AJ was kind enough to watch all my stuff and give me great feedback, and he's in the same boat as Chris Daniels, just such a great guy and willingness to give feedback to everyone in the company and try to make the company a better place. I can't say enough about the passion, we're talking about the two of them right now, from going to TNA and traveling the world and doing amazing things and now coming back to Ring of Honor and just having the passion and the heart to give back to this company and give back to the fans and give back to the wrestlers who are working for the company now. It's just, they're two amazing people.
I totally agree. Someone who I really want to see you wrestle in a match, in a feud, rather, and that is Rhino.
Rhino. You know, I don't think I have ever met Rhino, and I would love to. I think... And I've studied Rhino. I think me and him will have a lot of similarities. Actually, at one point in time, I don't even know if I've really mentioned this before on any of these podcasts or anything, but at one point in time, I was talking to the Road Dog, who was working for TNA, who was interested in bringing me in to team with Rhino. Obviously, it didn't actually work out, but I was literally in talks with him about coming in. Didn't go very far, but I think that was interesting because when he saw me wrestle, he instantly thought of Rhino. So
yeah.
Rhino would be a tremendous feud. But I haven't met him, so I'd love to meet him and talk to him and He's a guy that I've studied, and yeah, he'd be real cool to get in the ring with.
Absolutely. And then lastly, Vince McMahon.
Vince, when I wrestled Sylvester Trakai on SmackDown, and I think this is the only actual interaction that I've had with Vince. And so it was on SmackDown, and I did the match, and I came back to the curtain. And he actually stood up out of his seat in Gorilla and shook my hand and told me, great job. And I remember, like, wow, I walking out of Gorilla position and being like, wow, I can't believe he just did that. And then, like, an hour later, after it settled in my brain that Ben said that, I'm like, wait a minute, why? If he said that, why didn't he offer me a job?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, all the things that I've seen events at TV, and I have friends who work for the company, I've never actually heard anything terrible about Vince McMahon or seen him do anything terrible. So he's somebody that I wish I had the opportunity to work for to actually get to know who Vince McMahon is, because I don't think any of us who have never worked for him really have any clue. So it's my opinion.
Absolutely.
There.
And lastly, let us know what's coming up for Hansen.
I have Chaotic Wrestling this Friday night in Lowell, Massachusetts. I'm returning there. I've been off a couple of their last events because of other bookings with Ring of Honor. So I'm excited to go back there. They're kind of my home promotion. And the 20th, I am in West Warwick, Rhode Island for the XWA, and there's a big, I think it's a six-man gauntlet match with a lot of great stars. XWA does a great job bringing in, you know, quote-unquote names. There's going to be a lot of good guys there to see. Great crowds, great atmosphere. And then on the 27th, it's Ring of Honor in Wheeling, West Virginia. I'm pretty sure it's a TV taping, and that should be pretty exciting.
Awesome. Hansen, it's been an absolute pleasure to let everyone know just how passionate you are about the wrestling business. And, of course, we see it in your ring work, but it's also good to hear it from you to couple with that. And just all the Pancakes and Power Slams fans and followers, listen to the podcast again to be sure to support this guy. This guy has really been putting his blood, sweat, and tears in the wrestling business, and just really, you heard his story. And he's ready to just take the wrestling, take wrestling by force and by storm. And I see nothing but the best for you, Hansen. I really pick and choose my the people I want to interview specifically, because I know that there's buzz about them and there's a lot of opportunity, but a personal interest as well. And I just want to thank you for taking your time to really interview this show, and great thanks, man.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Have a good night, and thank you very much again.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, ROH Top Prospect winner Hansen on the show, episode 128. And without further ado, let's introduce the co-host, Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. How are you tonight, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. What did we tell you guys? We have interviews that will just absolutely blow your mind, give you such a whole different perception of the individual, the superstar. So it's, I mean, well done, Pancakes and Power Slams interns, Chris Featherstone. I mean, job well done. We all pulled together. We were able to get this done, and couldn't be happier to be a part of the team. This is episode 128, Pancakes and Power Slams. We got
absolutely
a lot to cover Monday. Oh, we got some exciting things coming up tonight. We have a great flavor of the week. Of course, stay tuned. Back to you, Chris.
We do. The flavor of the week is the best boots in WWE history. The best big boot finishing maneuvers or signature maneuvers in WWE history. Also, before we go forward, I just really want to thank Hansen. just a fantastic, upstanding guy. And, you know, we talked before the show, and he was excited to interview with the show. And, you know, I've been, as long as we've been doing a show for almost 2.5 years now, and as long as I've been writing for different websites, I'm always humbled when someone will take out their time. I mean, it's 11 o'clock Eastern time. It's 11:40 now, actually, Eastern time. That someone would spend their time, take their time out into interviewing a live show. I don't care if I've done, you know, 25 interviews. I don't care. Every single interview, I'm thankful, I'm humbled, and I'm grateful that each professional wrestler would take their time out to spend time in the show with all the Pancakes and Power Slams fans and followers. So big thank you to Hanson. And be sure to, of course, if you haven't subscribed, Pancakes and Power Slams on iTunes yet, do that. Subscribe on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and Facebook, like Facebook at Crave Wrestling page. I'm very happy with the influx of Facebook followers that we're getting at the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So we'll have more information on there as far as Hanson events is concerned. Listen to this podcast again, and also we'll have information on the Facebook page about Hanson's upcoming event. So support Hanson. Just a great story, man, for him to really be down in the dumps and really just pull himself out of that to become the amazing character that he is now in Ring of Honor. So my hat goes off to Hanson. A fantastic interview, man. Thank you very much for your time. Trivia question of the night. Of course, trivia question of the night is, who were the four members of the Union faction? Who were the four members of the Union faction, which was one of the worst factions in WWE history? There were corporate rejects, and for some reason they decided to band together because they all were kicked out of the corporation. And they had a brief faction for the sake of trying to disband the corporation. And, yeah, they all carried 2x4s and bad news, as Mr. Baird would say. All right, let's get to Raw. Last episode, they called it the season premiere of Raw. We first start with the cage match. It really seems like it's culminating the feud between Bray Wyatt and Y2J. Of course, Wyatt takes the victory. Now, I mean, I wrote an article on What Culture that it's called, the title of the article is Chris Jericho is Not the Reason for the Bray Wyatt Decline. And it's a long article. Check it out on whatculture.com. Or Google it. Google the title, Bray Wyatt. Chris Jericho is Not the Reason for the Bray Wyatt Decline. Google that title. It'll come right up on What Culture. Check it out. It's a lengthy article really explaining why, because people are so quick to pinpoint why Chris Jericho is just making Bray Wyatt, just sucking the life out of Bray Wyatt, and yada, yada, yada. A lot of people say John Cena buried Bray Wyatt. I can understand why they say that, and I've said that before. As far as there was just something about the Cena Wyatt feud that just didn't click. I said on my article that it was just too much too soon for Bray Wyatt, and I've talked in previous shows about the whole too much too soon treatment, and it's just something that didn't click with Cena and Bray. It was something that didn't click with Jericho and Bray. It was something that didn't click with Kane and Bray. So who's the catalyst here? The catalyst here is Bray Wyatt. Now, I understand how his promos are very eclectic and just bizarre, and I understand how, you know, he has a very different character, the Fireflies, the music, yada, yada, yada. I understand that. But I wrote in my article, I wrote two reasons why the Bray Wyatt character is just not going over. One, because he confuses everyone. He gives us the Mick Foley cheap pop of saying the city before he blows out the torch, before he says, we're here. Of course, that's going to garner a cheap pop because Foley started it. That's the city, the say the city wherever you are, cheap pop, period. You're going to get pops for that. And then secondly, well, with that, people don't know to cheer or to boo because he gives us the cheap pop and then he does the heelish mannerisms. So we don't know to cheer. We don't know to boo. That's confusing. And I was explaining how tweeners in the WWE, they have an expiration date. There's no such thing as a tweener for a long time that's over. I can argue with that with anybody. And don't say Austin. I said this in my article. Don't say Steve Austin, because Steve Austin was a tweener for a short period of time after his Bret Hart feud at WrestleMania. What was that? WrestleMania 13, I believe, was Hart Austin, right? I believe it was 13, yeah. So after
Ken
the
Shamrock.
13, yeah, with the, yeah, Ken Shamrock was the referee. So after that, he became more of a tweener, but that didn't last long because he eventually became a babyface. He was a babyface with an edge, but he was feuding against the biggest heel of the company in Vince McMahon. And he was getting cheered. That's a baby face. I mean, there's no type of tweener between that. He didn't wrestle heels. He didn't wrestle faces. He wrestled heels. He was an edgy baby face. And Bat News Brown, he was a tweener for a second, started beating up everybody. But he became a heel. The Black Glove Diesel, I wrote in my article, he was a tweener for a second, started beating up everybody, wrestling faces and heels, but eventually he became a full-fledged heel. So tweeners don't have long expiration or long shelf lives. And with Bray Wyatt, we're kind of seeing that. He's getting cheered. He's doing the we're here. He's doing all of that. You've got the fireflies waving the cell phones. But he still wrestles bad guys. So he needs to turn face. There's absolutely no more layers that you can put on Bray Wyatt's character, period. Nothing. He can feud against any other face coming. Whoever face he feuds with, it's not going to click. It's not going to bring him up the ladder because he feuded with Kane. He's feuded with Daniel Bryan. He feuded with CM Punk. And he feuded with Chris Jericho and John Cena. Those are five of the top of the biggest baby faces in the past 5 years, with the exception of Kane. He keeps going in and out. But at least four of the biggest baby faces in the past 5 years, and he's still not considered a main event guy. So it's not, you can't really blame the people he's feuding with. You got to blame creative, and you got to blame really Bray Wyatt's character at this point. So you can't point the finger at Chris Jericho. I have no idea why at the end Bray Wyatt beat up Chris Jericho after he won the cage match. Like, that's going to really push him at all. I just didn't like this feud, but you can't point the finger at Chris Jericho.
Can't point the finger at Chris Jericho because, I mean, he's just there until his next tour. Love to see him. Yeah, the Bray Wyatt, he's not clicking with anybody, and that's, I mean, WWE seems to do that here and there with characters, and you're mentioning the tweeners and everything, and what really bugs me is he's such a good talent. He's such a great character.
He is.
I mean, he's really, I remember at first when he came out, I was kind of iffy when he first debuted, and everyone's saying, well, the hype is much better than the actual product. I mean, but he's intriguing. I like to see him, what he's up to, what's he going to do this week. But it's just not gelling to what it could be. I mean, he should be almost main event status by now, and he's still just dumpy mid-card. I won't say dumpy, because, I mean, I won't say anyone that faces Chris Jericho is dumpy, but it just, it's not what we can really sink our teeth into. And can I answer the trivia question yet?
You can, absolutely.
I believe it. I know the Big Show was in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. What's his name? He was the Motley Crue bodyguard for Test.
Yes.
Shamrock was in it. I believe, was it Mankind, their leader?
You got it. Those are the four. Up Yours.
Yeah.
Right?
People you ought to respect, son.
Yeah, yeah. Union of people you ought to respect. It was just weird. Yeah. And somehow you got a union from there. That was the union of people you ought to respect, son. That was the union. And then they also, it also went by like a sub name of Up Yours. Or it was just weird. It was just a weird faction. You can't even make a correct acronym out of Union. And,
It was just a weird time.
Their theme song was on WrestleMania 2000, I believe, on Nintendo 64. And it was just really weird that you had the option to have a 2x4 and the creative wrestler. So you had your 2x4 option. And, the Union was just a weird, weird faction. And they didn't last long. It made perfect sense why they didn't last long, because they were just knockoffs. But, yeah, very, very interesting. Speaking of that, it's funny how so many things just spawn Flavor of the Week topics. I think Shane McMahon had a faction, a real brief faction called the Conspiracy, and I believe they were called the Conspiracy, and they had really, really good talent. I think it was like I know Angle, I believe it was Angle, Benoit. It was just an amazing list of people, technical wrestlers that were part of that faction, but they didn't last long at all. They only last probably about a few weeks. And I was thinking, like, wow, like, why in the world did they not last long? Because it was such an amazing selection of wrestlers that was a part of that faction. But I know they could have done a lot better than the Union did, but the Union was just they were pretty awful. Next trivia question for the people in the chat room or Twitter. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. What was Christian's name in TNA? What was Christian's name in TNA? Next on Raw, we had Dolph Ziggler showing people the mid. See, here's the thing. This is the reason why I still. And I have to have the interns get back with me on as far as how long Raw's been 3 hours. But this is the reason, things like this, and we'll get to the Bella crap in a minute, but stuff like this is the reason why I still am against a 3-hour Raw. This is exactly the point. This does not enhance the program. This dilutes the program without question, it dilutes the program. Who in the world wants to see now? Here's the thing: we talk about the mid-card title. We had a fantastic Flavor of the Week. Thank you, everyone, for giving us good feedback on the Flavor of the Week last week. As far as who was the better, who's the better mid-card title? I believe it's the U.S. title. Derek believes it's the Intercontinental Championship. I believe both of them are amazing, has amazing lineage to it. But the point is, the bigger point is, both of them have good lineage to it and should not be diluted whatsoever. What dilutes the lineage of the Intercontinental Championship? You having ridiculous segments like this. Now, Dolph Ziggler showing people photos of The Miz and, oh, my goodness. And then Miz and Sandow interrupts, and he just shows us images of him shaving his chest hairs, and oh my goodness, it was absolutely ridiculous. And I just really loathe seeing moments like this for the mid cards. And here's the thing, and I've said, and Derek and I have said this many times on the show and previous shows, Brock Lesnar is out. He's the WWE World Champion now. He's scheduled to come next week. But he appears once a month, twice a month, and So he's going to be, and especially if he continue, if he retains the title at Night of Champions, I mean, I don't see him being a part of the October pay-per-view, which is Hell in a Cell. So this is the time to really push your mid-card talent, but instead you show us ridiculous pictures that no one wants to see. I am so disappointed with how they're treating the Intercontinental title at this time. Absolutely disappointed with how they're treating the Intercontinental title this time. Looks like we had a little bit of difficulty, but I absolutely loathe it. I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's just a waste of time for us to continue to have this three-hour Raw based on just ridiculous Intercontinental title storylines. Yes, absolutely. And I don't think that people should really look at feuds like this and support them. It's hard for me to believe that anyone supports feuds like this, and it's hard for me to also think that the WWE is condoning and expecting people to support a feud with the build-up being, I hacked your picture, so I'm going to show the world your pictures. Absolutely ridiculous. Now, the matches between The Miz and Dolph Ziggler have been decent. They've been decent matches. I mean, it even looks like a good feud between The Miz and Dolph Ziggler on paper. It looks like a good feud. But for some reason, they want to dilute the feud with just simply having ridiculous storylines like this. I'm so just disappointed with what I see with that. I think it's an absolute travesty. Next, we get AJ Lee and Paige defeating Rosa Mendez and Natalya. Now, I understand why Rosa Mendez and Natalya is teaming up. Somehow, Rosa's a mentee of Natalya is trying to show Rosa the ropes. Oddly enough, Rosa Mendez is older than Natalya is, but it happens sometimes. I mean, I've mentored people older than me, so I guess it makes sense. But I just don't understand just the angle they're going with that. And I understand why AJ and Lee and Paige are still teaming up, but that's getting old too. I'm also surprised why they are doing a triple threat match instead of a four-way, especially when they're doing the whole Bellas thing still. We'll get to the Bellas segment here in a minute. But I'm kind of confused with the Divas division at this point. And I know Derek keeps touting about – Derek, listen to the previous shows. You'll see how much Derek does not like the Divas division. I'm the one that's usually supporting the Divas division every week, but it's running thin. It's getting harder and harder for me to support the Divas division because it's getting confusing. I understand that AJ Lee and Paige is really the only thing that's exciting about it, but that's starting to lose its luster because we're seeing too much of it without, again, more layers on the feud. And so I don't know. So Dolph Ziggler, Intercontinental title feud is ridiculous, and this Divas title feud, I'm not very interested in it either.
I'm not interested, and it's a shame because you should be interested because, I mean, there's AJ Lee and Paige are talented Divas, and you can't say that much about any of the Divas now, but they actually have something, and it's going to crap again. I mean, it was on a bit of a high for, you know, maybe three or four Raws, and now it's back into the dumpster where it kind of belongs, and I can't really rely on too many of the other Divas to really carry the show because they haven't, and it's too bad. And the Intercontinental thing, I love with Dolph Ziggler having the belt. I mean, he's great for the Intercontinental title, but again, he's just there. He's not going to be – I want him to stand out, and nothing they're booking him for makes him stand out. It just makes him look like another random Intercontinental champion.
Yeah, I agree. Then we see Randy Orton attacking Chris Jericho backstage. Now, Jericho's selling this knee, and then we heard later on in the show that it's not that Chris Jericho's okay with the knee. You know, he gets injuries, he's going to be okay. Now, I'm okay with the Jericho Orton feud. I'm totally okay with that. Here's the problem with that is this. It just buries Jericho more in the ground when he puts people over. And it's going to be even worse now if he puts Orton over, because Orton isn't even a new talent. And so if Orton beats Jericho, here's the thing. I've watched, you know, although I write for a very reputable wrestling website, I'm a wrestling fan. I'm an avid wrestling fan. I listen to podcasts. I support other sites and look at different videos and things like that. And you know, I've seen people just bash Chris Jericho and say that, you know, he's doing this. And I look at comments too. I've said many times I'm very interactive with the fans that follow me on Twitter, that tweet me. I don't even care if I disagree with you. I still appreciate that you're spending the time to tweet me or send me a message on Facebook or through email. So, but I've had conversations where people I've heard, and I've had conversations with people who just believe that Chris Jericho should go away. And what I mean by that, go away for good. And I believe, and here's the thing, if I see Chris Jericho put Randy Orton over, and people know how much I'm a Jericho mark, but for the sake of Jericho's legacy, I would be okay if he doesn't come back, if he puts Orton over, to be honest with you, because it gets to the point where there's really no point to pit, and it hurts me to say this, but it's true. I have to speak the truth here. It hurts me to say this, but there's no point in bringing Chris Jericho back if we know that the primary reason of his return is to put someone over. Last time it was Dolph Ziggler. Time before that it was CM Punk. And it's like, we know why you're coming back. They're going to pinpoint someone. You're going to put them over, and that's it. You're going to go away. That's not legacy status, for one. And two, it just tarnishes your character. It just makes – and here's the thing. And Chris Jericho's character isn't just impervious to be tarnished. I mean, we saw that with Ric Flair. His character was tarnished a bunch of years towards the latter parts of his career. Because it was just getting to the point where people were like, come on, Flair, just retire, guy, come on. And it didn't tarnish the overall scheme of his legacy, because 16-time world champion, best heel ever, we understand that. But at the same time, the latter years were really pushing it. And Jericho, as much as I'm a Jericho mark, he's one of my top five of all time, Jericho never reached that big legendary status to have to be impervious to having it be tarnished. And I think that is being tarnished, because we know why Jericho's coming back, to put people over. And I've said many times, you're not putting people over if you're continuing to lose matches. That's not putting people over. So hurts me to say, but if this is Jericho's last stint, if we're going to keep seeing this, I'd rather not have him back.
I agree. I mean, nobody wants to see Jericho go when he's there. And it's, why would he put Randy Orton over? He doesn't need to be put over. I mean, he really doesn't.
Right.
And if Jericho puts him over, it's not going to do anything for Randy Orton, but it's going to hurt Jericho. I mean, give Jericho his due. I mean, if you're going to – I mean, the guy's been – so good for that company. I mean, I agree. He's never really reached the mecca that you kind of want him to see for everything he's done for the wrestling business, period. And it's something you don't want to see that happen to Jericho. I mean, it probably will, WWE fashion. Norton's going to win. It's going to make him look tough again. But it does nothing. I mean, nobody's going to remember that match. I mean, unless it's Jericho's last. And oh, yeah, Jericho, he lost that match. But Jericho will win. I mean, put so much joy in the people's hearts, I think. Just, okay, let him, you know, if you never see Jericho wrestle again, then, well, I'm sure that would never happen, at least not in in the near future. But for this stint right now, I mean, Jericho has to win it to make him look reputable, because if he does come back, you know, 6, 7, 8 months from now, it's yay, okay, Chris Jericho's back. Easy jobbing now.
Yeah, sadly, I just don't want to see that. For the sake of me being a Jericho mark, I don't want to see that again. So, and it's already getting worse and worse, especially putting a Bray Wyatt over that just isn't over. I mean, he's tried and tried and tried, but just people. And when he beat up Chris Jericho at the end, he wasn't even getting like a chorus of boos. People just, I mean, his reaction before he said follow the buzzers. If you have Raw on your DVR, just be sure to pay attention to the sister between the Sister Abigail and the follow the buzzers. The reaction that people are giving Bray Wyatt, people just weren't doing much. He wasn't getting a lot of reaction, and that's really, really bad. I mean, it's good to have, you know, you have two ends of the spectrum. You have Daniel Bryan and you have Vicky Guerrero. You have the huge Daniel Bryan, everybody's behind him pops, and you have the huge heat of Vicky Guerrero. It's good to be close to one of those. It's good to have a whole lot of heat or a lot of pops. If you're in the middle area, ooh, you're in some bad, bad, bad territory. And you're not going to last long in pro wrestling, at least in a prominent role, or if you aspire to be a main event or even an upper mid-card superstar. You need to be on one of those ends of the spectrum, either a ton of heel heat or a ton of pops, or at least close to it. And, ooh, man, when I heard Bray Wyatt's reaction from the crowd yesterday after that, I was like, either they're confused, I don't know whether the Cheer-a-Boo or the Bray Wyatt character is just getting stale. And it may be both. It may be both of them. I wouldn't disagree with it if it was. Paul Heyman in-ring promo interrupted by John Cena. I mean, we're going to see more and more of this. It wasn't bad. I was okay with the promo. But, I mean, how long are we going to endure Heyman coming out on behalf of Brock Lesnar? Now, I'm okay with Lesnar not I'm slightly okay with Lesnar being champ and not coming out. I understand it. And it adds to the mystique of the Brock Lesnar character. I get it. But for Paul Heyman to come in his stead and cut just long promos, I have already gotten tired of it to an extent. I like Heyman's promos. He's gold on the mic. But talk about your shelf life. I think that don't have a long one. And I definitely don't want to keep seeing it week after week after week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Heyman is a wrestling mind. He's a wrestling genius. He gets on my nerves at times. But I can't deny him from what he is. He's almost as good as Jim Cornette. He's just not there yet. But it's one of those, you know, he's got a potential. But I kind of like the Brock Lesnar coming out every 2-3 weeks or so. Because, yeah, I get that. You want to add suspense. You want to add hype to the championship. Or to the champion. Because they haven't had that in a long time. It's changed hands so many flipping times in the last few years. And it's just, this is kind of different. It's kind of a different feel of the champion right now that you have. It's like, oh, Brock Lesnar's coming. Oh, Brock Lesnar. It's Brock Lesnar. Oh, Brock Lesnar. So it does add a little bit. It does, not a little bit, a lot of energy to Raw. It really does. And with Paul Heyman coming out and putting in his 2 cents at times and without Brock Lesnar, I mean, that's admirable. I can see why they do that. I mean, I would as well. Goes on a little too long. He's really long-winded, but, you know, he gets his point across.
Absolutely. Next we have, Christian Cage is the correct answer. Great job. Seth Rollins defeating Sheamus. I'm okay with this. But here's the thing, though. The reason I'm okay with it is because it kind of gives Sheamus that underdog pop. I get it. Seth Rollins is the Money in the Bank. I get it. So Seth Rollins beating Sheamus isn't too much of an upset, although Sheamus doesn't lose much. So that is putting someone over, like I've said before, since Sheamus hardly ever loses. So, but the only thing is about, and the only problem I have with this, and I like Sheamus Cesaro. They were teasing that a few months ago, and now they're picking back up on it. I like them. I like the feud. They're going to have a fantastic match. Both of them are very good, solid wrestlers. Very no-nonsense, just really brutal and just intimidating and just very just a very fighting style wrestlers that I like a lot. But the problem I have with this is Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins to me is not the next guy. He's not even the next guy, or the next guy after the next guy after the next guy. I don't see world champion in Seth Rollins. I just don't. Not yet. He's been Money in the Bank winner for just about 2 months now. And these 2 months, to me, even his feud with Dean Ambrose was great, actually. Fantastic matches. Really, really, really good matches. But that just didn't do anything to me as far as Seth Rollins' ascension to the main event level. I think that he's shrouded by he's shrouded by your Rusevs, who's a better heel than he is, your Randy Ortons. I think your Brock Lesnar's, of course. He's probably like the number four heel right now, and that's not going to get you anywhere as far as world champion is concerned. So the number one heel is Brock Lesnar. And, you know, Brock Lesnar, when he's there, he's there. He's going to be the guy. Two, I would say Randy Orton. I can see Randy Orton stepping aside for Rollins, but Rollins just isn't ready yet. Rusev is definitely a more over heel than Rollins is, because Rusev is just doing fantastic work as a heel. Awesome growth. And then you have Rollins, and to be the number four heel, he still gets some babyface pops, which confuses people. So I don't really see a big future with Seth Rollins. I would imagine if he cast that in within the next few months, he still wouldn't be ready. Even in the next 6 months, I don't see Seth Rollins ready. I like Seth Rollins' career. I follow him when he was Tyler Black in Ring of Honor. He was one of my favorite wrestlers at the time. Followed him in NXT, and I was a fan of his then too when he won the title. But I just don't see mega WWE main event star in him.
I don't either. At least not in the next couple of years. Like you said, he's just a he's in the heel stable, but he's not a standout guy. I mean, he's got Money in the Bank. I mean, he's got that going for him that's great. That'll keep him in the contention of, you know, who's the biggest heel, who's this, that. But he's nothing to really shy about. I don't see him main eventing anything soon. And, I mean, he's got some stuff to work on. That's great. I'm not ruling him out totally. But, I mean, he's not Randy Orton status yet, which I never thought I'd say Randy Orton had a status, but. You know.
Yeah, coming from you, that's a big deal.
He's a main player on Raw.
Yeah, he is. He's a top heel on Raw. He's a solid wrestler. I'll give that to Orton. Next, we see NXT. Yeah, he is. He definitely is a good solid wrestler. Next, we see an NXT exhibition, so to speak. Promoting us and pushing the NXT TakeOver 2, which I'm very excited about. I'm a avid watcher and big fan of NXT. I'm really excited about this. Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn defeating Tyler Breeze and Tyson Kidd. First of all, these are the perfect four people to bring up from NXT. Because first of all, they're having a four-way match at TakeOver 2. And secondly, even if they weren't in a four-way match, I would have brought them up. Because first of all, it makes Tyson Kidd relevant from a different aspect. He had to go the NXT route to be somebody because he was just wallowing in the mid-card, lower mid-card in WWE. But now he has a good role in NXT, and I absolutely love it. Tyler Breeze is a better version of Fandango. I know that's going to hurt you, but Tyler Breeze certainly is. And then Sami Zayn, when he was El Generico, I was a big fan in ROH in the Indies, and many people, of course, when you heard the Baltimore crowd doing the Olay chants, so of course they know. And then Adrian Neville, he was the MVP of the match. He was the standout. I think his work was absolutely amazing. He's a smaller guy. I haven't been a big fan of him as NXT champion, but to be on a Raw stage and say this is your moment, I think the biggest person who stood out was certainly Adrian Neville. Kudos to these four superstars from NXT, really showing that NXT is worth watching and is definitely a sleeper to the people who don't watch it. And just kudos to Adrian Neville for really maximizing his moment.
Oh, exactly. I mean, that was the best moment in Raw, I thought. I mean, the best part was the NXT invasion, if you want to call that. And I remember a long time ago on Monday Night Raw, and it was ECW invaded. And it was just kind of like, hey, what's going on? What is this? I know everybody knows what NXT, and everyone knew what ECW was back then. But to see invasion stuff like that, and it's like a whole new aspect to the show. And it's great promotion for the Electric Boogaloo. I think that's what they're calling it. But, I mean, that's good for NXT. I'm happy to see that. I want to see more of it. I don't want it to be overkill, but I do want to see, you know, pop-ins and, hey, this is this, and here's an NXT exhibition bout set for one fall. I get it. I like it. Keep doing it. I mean, that's a great aspect of Raw. That almost saved the show, to tell you the truth.
I agree. Really? I totally agree with that. Very, very well said. And I think that, of course, we can see it on the network every week, but at the same time, you know, people don't have the network. Who still wants the pay-per-views, who still watches Raw. So give NXT some Raw time every now and then. Make them, you know, allow them to be on a pre-show or just have like an NXT type of something on Raw or even, you know, SmackDown. I'd be totally fine with it. Next we have the Stephanie McMahon and Jerry Springer Bella Twin segment. Oh, my goodness. If last week didn't stink up the place, oh, this week was even worse. And I did not know that I could say that. I did not know that it could get worse, and it got worse this week. I was just ready to just fast forward the whole thing. Well, I'm like, okay, well, I have a show. I have my own show. I have the writing to do. I have this to do. I have that to do. But it's really hard for me not to just fast forward this whole thing. It was just awful. And this again, does not enhance the product when you're having ridiculous segments like this. My goodness, I was so disappointed again in this feud, and I've given up on the feud. It's hard for me to completely do that after just this short amount of time. I try my best to just hold on, but I've given up on the feud. I have no interest whatsoever in the Bella feud anymore.
I don't, and I never did really to begin with. I mean, it was silly. It was stupid. The acting's horrible. I don't like anything about it. Jerry Springer saved that show, and that's not the show, but he saved the segment at least, and that's not saying a whole lot. But, I mean, it fits the Springer character, however, so kudos to that, but, you know, not on Raw.
Yeah. Goldust and Stardust defeating Los Matadores. I'm cool with this. Goldust and Stardust, I've adapted to them quickly as a heel team. I'm cool with it, and I think that they are a very good choice to feud against the Usos. Usos get a little bit of retribution by hitting Stardust with a crutch on the ramp, throwing them off and getting a bit of retribution. But this should be a good match at Night of Champions.
It should be a good match, and I'm ready for a title change in the tag teams. I want the Golden Stardust to take the reins and be the new tag champions and hold it for a while, just like the Usos did.
We'll get your official predictions next week on the prediction show for Night of Champions on episode 129. Also, a big announcement as far as another interview coming up. Also, I did mention on the 23rd, we're having another interview. We're having former TNA superstar Jesse Neal. And, of course, I'll announce that and continue to plug and let people know about it throughout the coming weeks. But another interview coming up, and I'm not talking about the anticipated interview of Raymond Rowe, the other part of War Machine, coming up October 14th, but another interview coming up, and I'm really excited. So much support with Pancakes and Power Slams, and I'm incredibly excited, so check that out next week. Next, we have Adam Rose defeating Titus O'Neil. I'm still an Adam Rose fan, but now the bunny's involved. People don't like Adam Rose. I do, and I just will continue to like Adam Rose. Special shout-out to my son. It's past 12 o'clock, so his birthday is officially over, but my son's birthday was last night, yesterday, and special shout-out to my son, being 2 years old now. And other than the fact that I want to say that because it's my show, but he's an Adam Rose fan, and I will continue to say that until as long as he likes Adam Rose, I will like Adam Rose. Now, he kind of moves and kind of bounces when John Cena's music come on. I hope we're not creating a John Cena fan. I hope not. My wife likes John Cena. That's like in Ohio State and Michigan in the same house. But I hope my son doesn't convert. But he likes Adam Rose, and I like Adam Rose too.
And I like Adam Rose too. Well, hey, come on, you can't compare that to Ohio State and Michigan, for crying out loud, the John Cena thing. But hey, anyway, you know.
Yeah, you can.
That's great. And congratulations. But Adam Rose, yeah, I'm still excited about him. He hasn't really done much to impress me. I'm more worried, and I want to send out a search. Where has Fandango been? I haven't seen him.
Oh.
I need my. We need Fandango to come back. Night of the Champion, Night of the Champions, at Payback, whatever's coming up. We need Fandango, and we need it now.
We don't need the Fandango, but I think Fandango needs to really prove himself again at NXT. I think Fandango and Tyler Breeze would be a fantastic team. They need to team together. They just fit so well together, and I really think that that'll help. Other than that, I don't see anything with Fandango. Main event, Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton. The conclusion of the event, conclusion of the match ends with a cage lowering at the conclusion, and Reigns getting the advantage at first, but gets outnumbered. A big dive from Seth Rollins. He is the spot monkey extraordinaire. And eventually that leads to a bunch of chair shots by Randy Orton and a curb stomp on the chair by Seth Rollins. I'm okay with this. It was a boring ending to me, but at the same time, I'm okay with it because it brings down Roman Reigns and it gives him the opportunity to get that underdog face pop, which he so desperately needs.
Yeah, desperately needs it. It was not a bad match. It really wasn't. I mean, it lacked a bit of energy, but, you know, it was kind of like a fatigue almost. But, you know, it dragged along for a while, but then it picked up. But yeah, it was a typical main event for Raw. Wasn't the highlight. The main event should always be the highlight, but now NXT outshined that totally. So I mean, that's my takeaway from Monday Night Raw, was the NXT coming in, stirring the pot a bit. And, you know, that was phenomenal. hats off to that part. Season premiere, I didn't know they had seasons. I mean, it's a new episode every week, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was, the NFL came on. It was the season premiere of the NFL, so they wanted to book it as a season premiere. Like, ooh, season premiere. Real quick, Derek, this trivia question goes to you. Who were the members of the Mean Street Posse? Who were the members of the Mean Street Posse?
Shane McMahon, Joey Abs, something Rodney. Oh, I can't.
It was Rodney. It was just
Rodney.
Rodney.
Okay. Mm. All right, so I named them all.
One more.
Yeah,
one more.
And I'm sorry.
I'll give you a hint. Fuel.
Pete Gas.
There you go. There's your game of password right there. Yep, there's the Mean Street Posse. Real quick, we'll get to the flavor of the week. We'll talk about we'll name them, and we'll just do some takeaways with it. Again, I want to thank Hanson. Very, very good interview. Real quick, with speaking of ROH, before I go into Impact Wrestling, ROH is just amazing wrestling. It really is. And the match, the main event match between Christopher Daniels and Kazarian against the Young Bucks from the Bullet Club, New Japan's Bullet Club now. It was just such an amazing match. It was just a fantastic, fantastic match. And it really shows how amazing the ROH talent pool is. It was just absolutely amazing. And then Impact Wrestling, good match between Samoa Joe and Bobby Lashley. And speaking of Lashley, real quick, I did watch the MMA, Bellator MMA event last weekend, Friday, I believe it came on, and I saw the match that Bobby Lashley was in. Decent match. I definitely see some work that needs to be done with him, but I definitely see some growth within his MMA career from the previous ones that I've seen, the previous matches that I've seen that he's in. All right, real quick, the 10 most popular big boots in pro wrestling and WWE history, the 10 we have in no particular order are Sid, Kane, Undertaker, Big Show, Sheamus, Bradshaw, Kevin Nash, Hulk Hogan, Barbarian, and Test. Out of those 10, who is your favorite person that executed the big boot in the WWE?
Honestly, I want to say Kevin Nash and The Undertaker. That's it. I think, honestly, Diesel, I'm sorry. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. My favorite is Test. My favorite big boot in all of pro wrestling ever is Barbarian. He had his when he was in WCW, his finishing move was called the Kick of Fear. And I think that it was absolutely fantastic. And Test as well. I think Test was absolutely amazing. Real quick, got a tweet here. There's a GIF when Rollins was trying to slide in the ring and almost got impaled by a guide spike on the cage. Oof, that's pretty deep. But, yeah, I definitely want to give it up for Barbarian and Test. Those are my two favorite. All 10, just about all 10, have really patented their own version of the big boot. I definitely would give it to Undertaker as well for that. So, fantastic. Like Derek always says, 90 minutes is never enough. But thank you so much for an amazing interview. I'm so excited for these next string of interviews coming up on Pancakes and Power Slams. Be sure to check us out next week with 129 episodes with the pre-show for Night of Champions. And we will continue to give you the best Tuesday night radio of all of radio. How about that? And continue to follow us on Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling on Twitter, CraveWrestling@gmail.com, and of course, wrestling.com. We are wrestling.net. whatculture.com. Check out my previous my most recent article there. Thank you, Derek, as always. Fantastic co-host. Couldn't do it without you, man. Fantastic. Stay tuned for our next string of interviews. Follow us on Facebook. We do a lot of our updates at that point in time. Check out Hanson. Follow his stuff coming up. Until next week, have a good week. Enjoy Eureka Wrestling. Day loves Elijah, and God bless. Goodbye.